More than 5 months into the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza, the Israeli regime continues its campaign of killing, destruction, and starvation against Palestinians. The young generation in the U.S. is changing their views toward Israel as the apartheid regime keeps going ahead with war crimes in Gaza. And rifts are deepening among Israel's decision-makers over the effectiveness and pace of military operations in the besieged Gaza Strip. Thanks for joining us. More than 5 months into Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, dozens more Palestinians have lost their lives in overnight airstrikes on the besieged territory. In this latest attack, the regime warplanes struck the Jabalia refugee camp in Gaza City, killing 8 people and injuring several others. Several homes were also targeted in the southern cities of Khan Yunis and Rafah, resulting in the death of nearly 30 Palestinians there. The regime's naval forces also shelled the shores of Beit Lahia in the north, but no casualties have been reported from there. Separately, Israeli troops once again opened fire on Palestinians trying to reach an aid truck in Gaza City, injuring several people. The death toll from the Israeli onslaught on Gaza since early October has now surpassed 30,500, majority of them women and children. Earlier we spoke to our correspondent Muti Abu Musaba in the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah. He said that while Israeli warplanes keep pounding residential buildings, another gathering of aid seekers was targeted by the regime's troops in Gaza.
Let's begin from Khan Yunis city, where the Israeli occupation forces committed an appalling massacre against the Palestinian civilians, particularly in the surrounding areas of the European hospital, as the Israeli warplanes destroyed a residential building entirely. Dozens are still trapped under the rubble of that destroyed house. In the same area, the Israeli artillery maintained its shelling towards the eastern parts of the city, particularly Abasan and Al-Qarara neighborhoods. Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli warplanes renewed their airstrikes against Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. Several residential buildings were bounded by the Israeli occupation forces. In addition to the constant and the continuous Israeli bombardments resulted in from the Israeli artillery shelling reaching Al-Mughraga neighborhood and the northern part of Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. And in Gaza, as you have mentioned, that the Israeli occupation forces opened their gunfire once again towards the Palestinian civilians who were gathering near Al-Kuwait roundabout in the eastern part of Gaza City, seeking for the humanitarian aid heading to Gaza City. When it comes to the northern part of Gaza Strip, the Israeli occupation forces continued their airstrikes against the Jabalia refugee camp. An entire neighborhood was completely wiped out by the Israeli occupation forces after several residential buildings were destroyed in Al-Hawaja Street, particularly in Jabalia refugee camp. At least 8 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed, mostly women and children, over that attack. And in Beit Lahia city, the Israeli occupation forces intensified their attacks and their airstrikes against the residential buildings there. Continuous strikes and continuous Israeli artillery shelling, in addition to the catastrophic humanitarian conditions on the ground. This is the current situation on Gaza Strip.
Israeli media report a widening rift among members of the far-right Israeli cabinet and the military establishment amid growing sentiment against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over his policies. Reports say that the Israeli military's disagreements with ministers reached a new level in cabinet meetings. In a recent meeting, several ministers protested the regime's military chief, saying that the IOF ground operation in Gaza is not effective enough and that it is too slow. During the meeting, Herzi Halevi, however, reminded his opponents about their initial refusals to start a ground operation. The new development comes as Benny Gantz, a war cabinet member, is in Washington to meet American officials without the prime minister's permission. Gantz, a key political rival of Netanyahu, has faced backlash over the trip. According to reports, he was not even facilitated by the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. Pro-Palestine protesters have taken to the streets of the Chilean capital, Santiago, to demand the president sever diplomatic ties with Israel over the regime's war on the Gaza Strip.
Gobierno de Chile, What does the Chilean government do? They still have relations with a genocidal and apartheid state. That cannot happen. Mr. President, we must break all relations now.
After 5 months, Israel keep on committing a massacre and a genocide against innocent civilians. 15,000 children have died, and the least we can do is stand outside this murderous embassy and say, enough.
Protesters carrying Palestinian flags and banners gathered outside of the Israeli embassy. They chanted slogans against the ongoing genocide of the Palestinians and urged their government to take immediate actions. In November of last year, Chile recalled its ambassador to Israel, citing the regime's disregard for international laws. More recently, in January, President Gabriel Boric even likened the Israeli war in Gaza to Germany's actions in 1945. Several other South American countries like Honduras, Colombia, Belize, and Brazil have all recalled their ambassadors. The Brazilian president also criticized what he called Israel's insane action against civilians in Gaza. Bolivia has already severed ties with Israel. Calls for the isolation of the Israeli regime are gaining momentum globally. It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. A new poll shows young Americans are changing their views toward Israel when it comes to the way that they have viewed Israel and the genocide in the Gaza Strip. According to the Gallup survey conducted in February, positive views of young adults in the U.S. toward the Israeli regime dropped from 64% in 2023 to 38% this year. Their favorable opinions of the Palestinian Authority also show a small number drop of 4%. That's amid anti-Israeli sentiment over the Gaza war. Americans have held several massive rallies in major cities in solidarity with the Palestinians while demanding their government to stop aid to Israel and to press the regime to end its bloodshed of Palestinians. Farah Hughes is a journalist, author, and activist who joins us. We also have Said Mohsin Abbas, a journalist and political commentator, joining us. Welcome to you both. Farah Hughes, I'm looking at the percentage drop from 64% amongst the 18 to 34-year-olds down to 38%, which is a minus 26% drop. It's pretty obvious what this drop is all about, but the extent of it is where the question comes in for you as to what this means when it comes to the support and the lack of it now from this particular category.
I'm disappointed that the numbers actually aren't lower when it comes to support for Israel. But at the same time, we have all been fed a diet of how Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, a diet of how the Jewish people suffered during the Second World War and the abominable Holocaust. But we're witnessing a Holocaust right now in Gaza. While thousands of aid trucks are refused entry every day to alleviate the humanitarian crisis, and starvation is being used as a weapon of war by Israel and indeed its sponsor, America, with Biden, genocidal Joe Biden in Washington, there are thousands of ships and thousands of planes and thousands of trucks that are reinforcing Israel's military capacity to continue with this genocide in Gaza. And what we're witnessing with this drop in support in America, for especially for young people, people say the truth will set you free. Perhaps finally a generation in America is being set free from the blind propaganda that they have been fed, spoon-fed from the media, from the MSM, from American consecutive administrations, from practically the day they were born, to support Israel and to create Islamophobia in both North America and the West. And I think it's important that we realize that these people are the next generation of voters. They won't be voting for Biden. My only concern is, will Trump be worse? When I believe he will be elected in November. And when that young man, Aaron Bushnell, immolated himself outside of the Israeli embassy, I think that's a wake-up call, not just for this young generation of Americans, but for everyone in the world to see that the inhumanity and the crimes of the apartheid Israeli state affect primarily the people in Gaza and the West Bank and the Palestinian diaspora who are refused the right of return, but also it's a threat to the whole region, and indeed it is an existential threat to the whole world. Israel must be reined in, and something must be done on a political level across the West, which sadly I never see coming to fruition. But a new generation is aware of the truth, and hopefully a new generation will stand by the people of Palestine.
Well, taking a look at, again, this poll, I don't know if you're a fan of polls or not, Sinwar Abbas, but another thing that it indicates is the drop of when it comes to the parties in the U.S., from the Democrats, first of all, and then the independents, also seeing that the support has decreased. The Republicans, obviously, not as much. So that may also be a point to look at. Do you think that we're looking at this being an awareness that's going to continue, or do you think that it's a drop because of the genocidal war that's happening now?
Well, one would hope that the American public's moral conscience has finally been awoken. One would hope that having seen Israel play victim, you know, burn orchards, steal land, destroy trees, torture prisoners, steal life, rape victims, rape women, you know, very, very openly, and add to it the fact that people haven't understood that Israel is an exceptionist nation which is given carte blanche and clearance by all the highest international institutions, and that includes the UN and all the others, the Nuclear Proliferation Authority, to do all these things. You know, they've been harvesting organs for years. Nobody stopped them. They've been bombing other nations, other sovereign countries. Nobody stopped them. They can assassinate other people's scientists in their own countries who are doing peaceful work, and nobody stops them. So now the fact that they've been starving, looting, you know, they've been imprisoning children, and of course doing all the other horrific genocidal acts which are there plain and open for everybody to see, you would be really shocked if people weren't shifting their opinions. As to whether it will last and whether it will be long-term, people can be very fickle. Ultimately, people think about their own problems. And in the West, of course, there seems to be this really mysterious self-destruction that is going on, of course, with them taking on Russia in the Ukraine, etc., not caring about their energy resources. Europe, especially, has been committing harakiri on behalf of the US and Israel for a very long time. And there's a reason, because it's quite clear now from research that is being unveiled daily that the scale of Israeli infiltration and Zionist infiltration into not only, say, for instance, United Kingdom or US political systems, but also their intelligence systems, also all across, if you like, the corporate world. There seems to be an absolutely massive hold that these people, a disproportionate hold, which this ism of Zionists has. That is the bigger awakening. Now, how does the public move from the stage of the appall, the fact that they're appalled by the death of and the murder of so many Palestinians, to actually gaining their own liberation? Because Unit 8200, which is a deep Israeli deep state unit, has NHS, Foreign Office, Home Office data. They own all the data on us. They have thousands of people deployed across the whole range of British institutions, there to blackmail, to hack phones. Cellebrite is just one company I can name. Nice Systems, Elbit Systems. These are all organizations which the British government openly supports, funds. They literally fund them to do the dirty work of Israel. Israel, when will the British public or the American public realize that their own governments have sold out their countries, sold their own sovereignty to a nation which actually brings nothing but pain, torture, misery to not only Palestinians, but all of the people around West Asia and beyond?
Well, I think that they, I guess just in the States, the Israeli lobby is somewhat worried, and I'm going to refer to this to you, Fra Hughes, where AIPAC, this came out back in end of last year, had to offer $20 million to another Senate candidate to run against Congresswoman Taleb, where it says AIPAC is seemingly fighting tooth and nail to remove the only Palestinian-American from Congress. So I think that they are worried in a sense that their image is going down the drain, so to speak, given the fact that this war at this point has continued for so many months. Do you think that their bribing or pouring money over this is going to help them?
That's actually quite a difficult question to answer, primarily because politics across the West is totally corrupt. We have seen this. I've seen it myself in the local regional administration that we have here in the north of Ireland. AIPAC, the Jewish lobby, and money are the backbone of many political campaigns both in Britain and America, and I include practically every EU country. Money buys elections, advertising, votes can not necessarily be bought in Western democracies, but if you've got the primetime television, if you have the adverts, if you have people going door-to-door canvassing, if your message reaches as large an audience as possible, that's going to increase your chances of being elected. Just on that, and maybe to contradict what I just said, I'd like to congratulate George Galloway on his magnificent victory in Rochdale. A victory for the people of Rochdale, a victory for the people of the United Kingdom, and a victory for the people of Palestine. George stood on a platform of Stand By Palestine. He stood on a platform of 50 years of his own personal, emotional and political engagement with the Palestinian struggle. Perhaps what we need in the short term is more people standing on that platform. I agree with absolutely everything that Saeed said in his contribution, and I think it's important that we realise that some of the people that are involved in this, if we look at Jeremy Corbyn should have been elected as the Prime Minister to Great Britain, and what we ended up with was a concerted attack by the establishment, by the Zionist lobby, and by those that control, in my opinion, Keir Starmer and other leading members of the leading political parties. They destroyed Jeremy Corbyn, a man of integrity and honesty.
Okay.
And this is what you're seeing reflected in America with the attack on any pro-Palestinian electoral candidates.
Thank you very much for that, Fra Hughes. We do appreciate it. That's Fra Hughes speaking there. And also like to thank Saeed Mohsin Abbas, journalist and political commentator. Thank you to you both. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Despite court ruling, the Zionist regime continued to kill and cause harm in Gaza, blocked aid entry, and allowed officials to incite against Palestinians. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, it has now been more than 1 month since the International Court of Justice, ICJ, delivered an interim ruling calling on the Zionist regime to take measures to prevent acts of genocide in Gaza. The provisional measures were announced on January 26th, weeks after South Africa had taken the Zionist regime to the Hague Base Court over accusation of genocide against Palestinians. The court did not order Israel to hold its military operations in Gaza, one of South Africa's demands. It also did not rule on whether the Zionist regime was committing genocide and will likely not to do so for some time. However, it did rule on several provisional measures voted for by the vast majority of the court's 17 judges. It ordered the Zionist regime to take measures to prevent acts that fall under Article 2 of the Genocide Convention, namely killing members of a particular group, causing serious bodily or mental harm, deliberately bringing about the physical destruction of the group, and imposing measures intended to prevent births. The court also ordered the Zionist regime to enable the provision of urgent humanitarian aid, prevent the destruction of evidence of crimes, and to prevent and punish incitement to commit genocide against Palestinians. In addition, it commanded the Zionist regime to submit a report within a month outlining all measures it had taken to follow the ICJ's orders. Israel submitted a report earlier this week. Over the past month, actions taken by the child killer regime of Israel in Gaza appear to defy several of the provisional measures. Middle East Eye takes a look at this issue. The court instructed the Zionist regime to take all measures to prevent killing Palestinians in Gaza as part of its obligations under the Genocide Convention. However, Palestinian civilians were killed every day in the first 2 weeks following the ICJ ruling, according to an investigation by Air Wars. Between January 27th and February 9th, Air Wars monitored more than 200 incidents of harm. In 190 incidents, civilians were killed or wounded by explosive weapons, while civilians were killed or wounded by live gunfire in 36 accidents. Among those civilians killed were healthcare workers, journalists, people waiting for humanitarian aid, and those sheltering in education centers. In 13 separate incidents, 10 or more civilians were killed. The killing of Palestinian civilians continued beyond the first 2 weeks since the ruling. On February 10th, Hend Rajab, a 5-year-old Palestinian girl, was found dead nearly 2 weeks after she had been trapped in a car with her dead family and surrounded by Israeli regime forces. 3 days later, 67 Palestinians were killed during an Israeli regime assault on Rafah. The attack targeted 14 homes and 3 mosques. And survivors told Middle East Eye they were shot at by Israeli regime quadcopters while sheltering inside displacement tents. On February 14th, the Zionist regime troops reportedly shot dead a Palestinian man after sending him into Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis to warn others to evacuate. A week later, 40 people were killed and more than 100 wounded after what Palestinian officials described as a heinous massacre in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. The Zionist regime warplanes hit 4 homes in the area, killing mostly women and children. On February 29th, at least 115 Palestinians were killed and hundreds more injured after Israeli regime forces opened fire on people waiting to collect food from an aid envoy in Gaza City. The ICJ ruling also ordered the Zionist regime to take all measures to prevent actions that cause bodily or mental harm to Palestinians in Gaza. In addition to Israeli regime attacks, which have killed and wounded, there have been several reports of mental and physical harm towards Palestinians that either took place or have come to light since January 26th. Just 3 days after the ICJ ruling, Middle East Eye reported that Palestinians fleeing Khan Yunis through a supposedly safe corridor were being detained, humiliated, and taken to unknown locations by the Zionist regime's military. Eyewitnesses said civilians were searched and questioned by Israeli regime investigators and had their iris data recorded at a checkpoint. Some were put into trucks and taken to detention camps, where they were held in unknown conditions. And on January 30, a video was shared on a far-right Israeli Telegram channel appearing to show the Zionist regime troops coercing detained Palestinians to describe themselves as slaves. On February 4th, a Palestinian doctor said Israeli regime forces subjected him to abuse during 45 days of captivity, including sleep deprivation, constant shackling, and being blindfolded. Dr. Saeed Abdulrahman Ma'roof was working at Al-Ahli Al-Arab Hospital in Gaza City when he was surrounded by Israeli regime forces in December. He said his hands were cuffed, legs shackled, and eyes masked for nearly 7 weeks of imprisonment, and that he was made to sleep on pebbles with loud music blaring. Ma'roof lost 25 kilograms during that time. On February 5th, an undated image emerged of an Israeli regime troop in Gaza City towering over a Palestinian man who is stripped naked with his hands tied behind his back and blood pouring from a wound in his leg. And on February 19th, UN experts expressed alarm over allegations of rape, sexual assault, arbitrary detention, and other egregious human rights violations against women and girls in Gaza and the West Bank since the Zionist regime's war began. The independent experts said it received reports of Palestinian female detainees being subjected to multiple forms of assault, with at least two detainees reportedly raped, while others were allegedly threatened with rape and sexual violence. There was at least one report of a woman in Gaza allegedly being held in a cage in rain and cold without food. Last week, a Palestinian man abducted by Israeli regime forces from Gaza told Middle East Eye he was physically and psychologically tortured for weeks. Ali Hamdan was abducted in December from Jabalia, north of Gaza City, after his home had been bombed in earlier airstrikes, which killed his wife, daughters, and son-in-law. He said, "For over 42 days, my hands were tied and I was blindfolded. From 5 a.m. till 11 p.m., we were forced to sit in a specific position, and if you didn't follow orders, they beat you and put you in a stress position. We were stripped down to our boxers in the cold, and they did not care about the sick and the elderly, including people who were aged 75 or older." The Zionist regime was ordered by the ICJ to take measures to prevent deliberately inflicting conditions on Palestinians that are calculated to bring about the physical destruction of the community, in whole or in part. In addition, it was told to avoid measures intended to prevent births in Gaza. In the past month, international agencies and rights organizations have pointed out that several Israeli actions have led to such destructive conditions. Just this week, the UN's leading expert on food aid said the Zionist regime was intentionally starving Palestinians and should consequently be held accountable for war crimes. Michael Fakhri, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, told The Guardian, "There is no reason to intentionally block the passage of humanitarian aid or intentionally obliterate small-scale fishing vessels, greenhouses and orchards in Gaza, other than to deny people access to food. Intentionally depriving people of food is clearly a war crime. Israel has announced its intention to destroy the Palestinian people in whole or in part simply for being Palestinian. In recent days, two babies have died of malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza, with several rights groups accusing the Zionist regime of using starvation as a weapon of war. Some Palestinian parents have been forced to use animal fodder to satisfy their children's hunger."
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, for 5 months now, the Israeli regime has been pounding the Gaza Strip by their gunships, drones, fighter jets, hitting civilians at will. They've used phosphorus bombs, snipers, and ground troops, and are even testing out new weapons on the people of Gaza. Despite all of this, they have not been able to break the will of the Palestinian people. So now they've increased the use of their latest weapon, and that is starvation. They are starving the kids of Gaza to death and depriving them of water, too. This as the death toll continues to rise and now stands at over 30,500 people as the international community continues to debate whether a ceasefire will be implemented soon or not. To help me look at all of this, I'd like to welcome my guests to the Spotlight. Glenn Dyson, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway, Oslo. And Rick Sterling, investigative journalist out of Berkeley. Well, thank you both for being with me. I'm going to start off in Oslo. And Glenn, I'm going to read a partial definition of war crimes as declared by the United Nations. Murder, mutilation, cruel treatment and torture, taking of hostages, intentionally directing attacks against the civilian population, intentionally directing attacks against buildings dedicated to religion, education, art, science, or charitable purposes, historical monuments, or hospital. I mean, is there even one of these that the Israeli regime has not committed in Gaza?
Well, I think this began with, as you mentioned, military strikes against the civilian population. But what we see now is taking it to a whole new level, because this is actually blockade on aid. And it's all in the open in front of the camera. So you see Israelis blocking and preventing aid trucks from entering, very much for the explicit purpose of denying food for the civilian population in Gaza. So it is a deliberate man-made famine, which we are about to now see unravel completely. And even when some food has been able to get through, we see that the Israel army actually opens fire on civilians attempting to get some access to this food. And of course, we have the somewhat absurd scenario where the U.S. Airdrops aid in seemingly heroic effort, but this is a very strange U.S. position. It's very expensive to airdrop food, and it's also very little. Again, this is the American weapons being supplied to Israel, which are used to deny food to the civilians. And at the same time, they're airdropping food in because the Americans claim they're not able to get food in otherwise, because the people they're arming are preventing them from delivering the aid. So it's very hard to see if this is weakness on behalf of the U.S. government or if it's just crocodile tears that, allowing them to support the starvation of Palestinians while at the same time trying to distance themselves from it. Either way, it's obviously a humanitarian catastrophe.
Interesting point you just made, Glenn. What about that, Rick? Thinking about the Americans and dropping food there, food boxes, on the one hand, they could just stop supporting the regime, and of course they encourage it every day and are supporting it. On the other hand, many say that it's also a part of the psychological warfare, just to have these Palestinians torturing them more and running after food. I mean, your assessment of why they would even do this like they are.
I think it is to public relations, to give the image that they're concerned about the Palestinians, the plight in Gaza, when in reality they could stop it in a few days. But if the Biden was to pick up the phone and call Netanyahu and says it has to come to an immediate end. Of course, the U.S. in the past has done that on a few occasions. President Eisenhower did it in 1956, and Ronald Reagan actually did it in 1982 when Israel finally, after extended period of time after they massacred so many people at Sabra and Shatila. But the bottom line is that the Western governments are backing Israel. It's not just the U.S. The U.K. and Germany are also complicit, and they are a big reason that this has continued. Where we're at right now is, according to the United Nations, 576,000 people in Gaza, a quarter of the population, are facing death by starvation. Not only that, Israel has compounded the crisis by a few weeks ago they killed the head of security for Hamas, who was protecting and making sure that aid was going in was being distributed in a reasonable manner and a fair manner. So Israel has disabled, they basically created the situation where there's chaos in some situations, because you've got people who are starving, and the organizations that have been so successful in administering aid in a fair and proportionate way, like UNRWA and the World Food Program, have been prevented by Israel from doing their job.
Well, Glenn, the UN Special Rapporteur for the Right to Food has said that using food as a tool of war and denying food is a war crime. With this being said, and all that has taken place in front of the eyes of the world in real time, your perspective of what more evidence does the international community need to stop this genocide?
Well, it's hard to say what more evidence is needed. All of this is happening in front of the cameras. And again, the ICJ ruled that this was a plausible scenario of a genocide, and it explicitly gave a call for Israel to halt any potential acts of genocide. Now, as we now see very correctly, as just mentioned, there's a lot of countries who are backing Israel in doing this, and not just the United States. We even see countries like Germany who has increased its support for Israel. So we even saw now recently Nicaragua trying to take Germany to the ICJ for being complicit in genocide. And this is, you know, it's not hyperbolic. This is the ICJ has ruled, and the countries still supporting it are now making themselves complicit. And so, I just don't see what evidence is required now. There's been deliberate attack on civilian infrastructure, so the Palestinians would not have anything to come back to, so they would leave. And again, the intentions about ethnic cleansing, at least, is also very, very explicit. They're trying to make deals in order to get the Palestinians to go to other countries. And this is what's happening, making the Gaza unlivable for Palestinians. And this is effectively the next step, not just destroying hospitals and civilian infrastructure, but now also creating a humanitarian crisis through starvation so horrific that the Palestinians would be ethnically cleansed or relocated somewhere else.
Well, as I said at the beginning, it seems that there is no crime that the regime hasn't committed. And even the dead have not been immune to Israeli crimes. Today we saw the Zionist regime bombing a mass grave and body parts being strewn in northern Gaza. I mean, what does this mean, Rick? It's so mind-boggling. Why hasn't the Zionist regime been stopped, and why haven't there been arrest warrants issued for its leaders?
Well, it's in short because the West still has the amount of control that they do, unfortunately. They're able to commit war crimes in plain view and get away with it. I think the time is limited that they're going to be able to do that because more and more of the world, especially in the global south, is recognizing the hypocrisy and in this case the genocide that's taking place under the watch of the West, and specifically the U.S., which of course has the most influence on Israel. Israel's dependent on U.S. Funding, military and economic support, $3.8 billion every year, and now they're trying to get $14 billion extra right now. So I think the crisis that has emerged out of Gaza since October 7 is having a pivotal effect on perceptions around the world. As was remarked earlier, the filing of charges at the ICJ by Nicaragua against Germany for collaborating in genocide. These are measures that hopefully are going to bear fruit, and more people are going to see the reality and demand change. We're at a critical point in history right now where Israel is committing these crimes in plain view, as Professor Deason was saying.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Glenn, why does the collective West support this genocide?
I think it's just traditional support for Israel. It's always, been this way. But of course, on the 7th of October, a lot of Western governments were justifiably outraged by the attacks by Hamas, and they then gave their unconditional support for Israel. And And I think that many did not know what they signed up for, because when Israel obviously were not only after retaliation or getting Hamas, but seeking to solve the so-called the Palestinian problem, I think many simply just kept their current position.
And well, let me just jump in here, Glenn. Let me just jump in here, yeah. Glenn, because you said they were outraged at the situation, what happened on October 7th. How come they weren't outraged 75 years, the 75 years of oppression that the Palestinian people have seen, that they have been displaced? And, of course, the collective West, of course, was responsible for this to begin with in the creating of the Zionist entity. How come they weren't outraged up until that time that the Palestinian people have been being killed just continuously, at least since 1948, but of course even before?
Well, no, I'm not making any excuses for this. I mean, since the 7th of October, I just want to say that's been an incrementalism. But of course, you're very correct about this. And this is one of the problem which the West faces now. I mean, the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, he recently made the statement that that the global South now looked at the West in terms of being hypocritical, applying double standards. Well, this obviously appears to be one of the greatest understatements. What we're watching is a complete moral collapse. On one hand, we see, for example, the EU lecturing other countries about human rights, and now also backing effectively a genocide. So this is quite shocking. And I think what is forcing hopefully change would be what you can call people power, because as all these images appear on the screen, you see more and more people distancing themselves from their own governments. And I think this is the kind of pressure that's needed, because so far a lot of the governments are simply completely devoted to Israel, and right. You know, through these slogans of right to self-defense and all.
Well, Rick, the Palestinian representative to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour, addressing the UN, said that the international community has accepted the dehumanization of Palestinians. He said they allowed Israel to destroy Palestinian homes, displace the people, dispossess them, then wound them and kill them, all while looking the other way. And this impunity over the years has led to the genocide we are witnessing today in Gaza. Your thoughts on his comments?
I think they're very accurate. This has been going on for a long time, as you were pointing out. This is last fall was the 75th anniversary of the Nakba. At the United Nations, there have been various good attempts to change the situation. There was the right of return, Resolution 194, which Israel, when it joined the UN, it agreed to. And yet there's been this impunity, as you say, as you correctly say, that's gone on. And the people in Gaza have meanwhile been suffering ever since 1967, and especially since 2007. In the late 1990s, the Israeli journalist Amira Haas wrote a book called Drinking the Sea at Gaza, Days and Nights in a Land Under Siege. So that's just an indication of how long this has been going on, but it's at a totally new level now, where you've got blanket bombing of the tiny global, the tiny Gaza Strip. Most people don't realize how small it is, but you've got blanket bombing. You've got Israel preventing the supply of medicines, of water, of food, and other forms of aid, of energy. It's at a whole new level now, and I think this is going to be a wake up call. This is a wake up call and it's a pivotal moment in history where the whole world can see what the reality is, as opposed to the mythology.
Well, Glenn, looking at the current situation, would you say that all countries which have played a part in creating and supporting the Israeli regime are all responsible for the current genocide or not?
Well, I'm always hesitant about collective guilt, but in terms of countries who have been backing this for so long, I think this, seeing what's happening now, I think it's important to recognize this did not come out of nowhere. This has been going on for so many decades, and I think there's been also this effort of denouncing any resistance to occupation as terrorism. Now, obviously, when there's attack on civilians, it always fall in the category of terrorism, which should not, should of course be condemned. But no one has really defined a clear role for Palestinians. So, well, what has been the position for Palestinians who've been living under occupation, or who has been facing ethnic cleansing? No one has ever spoken about their right for self-defense, which has always been implicit that they can either live under occupation or face or be called terrorists and face repercussions. So I think, to a large extent, there is a lot of collective guilt going around that we have allowed this to go so far. And effectively, I think there's a lot of dishonesty as well, because people still talk about the two-state solutions, even when the Israelis are very openly saying they will not allow this to happen. So there is, I think a lot of crocodile tears and hypocrisy and collective guilt, obviously, going all around.
Rick, so at the end of the day, does it mean that there is no international community nor international law to protect Palestinian kids?
That's what it looks like. There's law, and the International Court of Justice hopefully is going to stiffen their call that they issued a month ago. We're waiting to see what Israel responds, because they were instructed or ordered to provide a report within 30 days, and that time is up. So we're waiting to see what happens. The good thing is that Israel's impunity, Israel's crimes against humanity, and the false charges of anti-Semitism are more and more seen around the world, and even in the United States. Growing numbers of people are speaking out against this. They're not only speaking out against Israeli policy, they're speaking out against Washington's policy. We had a big demonstration in San Francisco yesterday. People were denouncing the Israeli attacks on Gaza and the looming invasion of Rafah. That's just a sign of how much things have changed in the last, since October 7.
Mm-hmm. Well, Glenn, do you think the past 5 months have reiterated the importance of countries to be independent and militarily strong, because there is no law that will save them? And unfortunate reality of this world is that might makes right.
Well, this is the so-called international anarchy. Any state who wants to be, or any people who want to be secure, would have to effectively be able to protect themselves. Ideally, we should aspire to have some kind of an international community which reduces the dependence on having a hard power to ensure one's survival. But again, I think I can't really think of any better example than Palestine at the moment to see just such a glaring failure of the international community. And I think it's unique for many reasons. You asked before as well, and I think that at least in Europe, this idea that you have to pick a side, and nobody wants to go against Israel, especially because of our history in Europe, given the Holocaust, or in the way, not just by the Germans, but how the Europeans largely ignored the suffering of the Jews back then. But of course, this is it becomes very grotesque to use this as a justification for what's now becoming a genocide, or has become a genocide against the Palestinians. Also, I don't even think that this should be framed as picking a side. I don't think this is even Israel's interest. I think Israel will suffer greatly from this. They're isolating themselves, and it will. I think they're on the path to suicide if they continue like this. So I don't think anyone gains from this. This is horrific for the Palestinians. This is could be a suicide decision for the Israelis, and of course, possibility of regional war and global instability. This is an overall disaster for everyone, the way I would see it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the Europeans, some of them feel that it's hard for them to pick a side, because, of course, this is a Holocaust in itself. Well, Rick, would you say the reality of this genocide has been the biggest recruiter for the Palestinian resistance, since people have realized that there is no choice for them but to resist?
Mm-hmm. it's certainly been a huge wake-up call, and a lot of people who were unaware of the situation in Gaza were unaware of a Palestine 8 months ago are aware of it now. And they're not only aware of it, but they're speaking out, they're putting pressure on their congressional representatives. There's all sorts of actions happening every day in the United States, confronting politicians, confronting media. That's the good thing that's happened, but it's of course at a tremendous price. The Air Force Airman Aaron Bushnell, of course, who took the extreme act of taking his own life. I think there's widespread respect for him for what he did, and that's just another marker about, you know, how much things have changed and how awareness of Palestine. And, you know, it's in a way Palestine is symbolic because they're oppressed people, there are starving people, there are people like that all around the world, and this is just one extreme case. And I think we are going to see a shift of where the hypocrisy of the so-called Western rules-based order is going to be openly defied and challenged, and hopefully we can see some much better things ahead. I think the Nicaraguan application at the ICJ, South Africa's application to the ICJ, these are indicators of how much things have changed.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on the Spotlight. Glenn Dyson, professor of political science, University of Southeastern Norway, out of Oslo, and Rick Sterling, investigative journalist, out of Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering the doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atar, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a very special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom and Islamic scholar, Sayyid Zain. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid Zain. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Okay, Sayyid Zain, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the concept of velaya, or it's better to translate it into the successorship to Prophet Muhammad. After Prophet Muhammad and the event of Qadir selected Imam Ali alayhi salam by the order of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as his successor. His words and his actions, his orders were